It's our Cheeky Days podcast, brought to you by Elizabeth. We're diving into all the messy of parenting life and leaving perfection behind. Welcome, y'all. Hi, y'all. Welcome back to our Cheeky Days podcast. I'm so excited to be here with you guys today. And today we have my dear friend Melly on the show. And I have known Melly for, upwards of 12 years for sure, because Melly and I first met at the homeless shelter in Houston, where we work side by side together in the children's department. And I'm excited to have Melly on this show today because Melly is an immigrant from Mexico to the United States. She actually came to the U.S. when she was 13, and I wanted to have her on to really share her unique perspective on diversity as an immigrant, as a mom, and as a teacher. And you guys, we talk about so much today. We talk about the importance of stepping out of our comfort zone and really having those uncomfortable conversations with our littles and with others. We talk about the power and importance of empathy in our lives and being welcoming. We talk about different ways we can expose our littles to diversity, even something as simple as a trip to the grocery store. And we talk about how we can help our kids identify what makes them unique and different and how they can use that as they grow. You guys, and Melly's great because she really thinks and shares in stories. So she shares a lot of stories from her personal life and personal experiences, not only as an immigrant, but as a mom and as a teacher too. So I'm super excited to share our conversation with you. Let's jump right in and get started. Hi, Melly. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Elizabeth. Thank you for having me. I'm happy to talk.
I would love if you would just start off by sharing a little bit of your background and your story with us.
Sure. Well, I was born in Mexico, in the northern city of Monterrey. And I came to the United States when I was 13 years old. So I did my last year of middle school here and went to college here and then married and have two wonderful kids. One is a preschooler and the other one is going into third grade. And I am a Spanish teacher at their school. So whenever I introduce myself, I always say that I'm a part-time Spanish teacher and a full-time mommy. That describes me the best.
And so when you and I met, we met at Star of Hope. So can you tell me a little bit about, you came here as a kid to the United States. What brought you to move from Mexico to Texas and then work in a homeless shelter?
Sure. Well, my family decided to immigrate when I was very young. However, we didn't have the means to immigrate together. So my father immigrated to the United States by himself. First, and his idea in the back of his mind was always to look for a better future for us. So I always appreciated his vision and his sense of, you know, fatherly figure, just trying to be the best provider that he could be for us, stepping outside of his own boundaries and his own comfort zone to try his best to provide for us. So I think that's always in the back of my mind, and everything that I do is to not conform to what feels best or what feels familiar, but to step out of that. And this is a funny story about how I came to Star of Hope. I called one of my best friends in high school who had moved away for college to San Francisco, and I was telling her why I had quit my job and how I needed a quick second part-time job to be able to, you know, survive my college life. And I said, I think I'm just going to go and work at a retail store or something. And she said, Melly, don't do that. Every time I look at you and what you do in your life, it's so inspiring. You're always trying to help people. You're always talking about being the best that you can be. Go out and look for a meaningful job where you can apply those skills that you have, that love that you have for people. And I said, you're right. but where do I go? And so I remember looking at the ads in the taxi cabs that we have here in Houston that say, you know, Star of Hope, ending homelessness one family at a time, and little quotes like that. And I wonder, is that place real? Do we have homeless people in Houston? I mean, I know we do, but do we really have shelters for them? Do we do nice things like that for them? And sure enough, I went online and I found out about Star of Hope and what their mission was and what they did. So I applied there, and I've always had a love for kids. So I knew that eventually I wanted to work in their children's department. So yeah, that's how I got there.
So you work with kids at the shelter. You have two kids of your own, but now you are also working with kids. Tell us more about what you're doing right now with kids.
Yeah, it's interesting. My life always brings me around to working with kids. It always ends up in that, which is wonderful. I love them. So right now I'm working as a part-time Spanish teacher at my son's school. It started out as a request from my son, who said he would like me to go and teach correct Spanish pronunciation to the kids in his class because he was not happy with his current teacher. And so I said, okay, well, Samuel, I'm not sure I can fix that, but I can try. And so at first I just thought about volunteering at my son's class. But when I talked to the principal, he said that they could really use a Spanish teacher that could teach kindergarten through fifth. So I ended up doing that. And then eventually I got added on middle school. So now I teach kindergarten through eighth grade Spanish. And I love it. I think it's so important to teach kids diversity and other people's language and culture and traditions and what they do. And that's exactly what I do with my Spanish class. I don't just limit it to the Spanish language and its grammar or its proper use. I go mostly into my own culture, because that's where I feel most confident, but also throughout Latin America, how people are different from us and the things that they do and how we can appreciate the way people live, even if it's not similar to ours. So I'm enjoying it. It definitely opens up for very interesting conversations with the littles, and that's what I love the most.
Yes, are they taking to it? Like, how do they respond to what you're teaching them in class?
You know, it's interesting because the little ones adore me. Miss Martinez, Spanish time. Yay, we get to sing. I sing a lot with them. And the older ones, if they were introduced to Spanish when they were younger, they're very responsive. But if they're completely new to it, I find that they're very apprehensive. Like, they just maybe don't feel comfortable enough, or it feels so foreign that they're afraid to step out into it or try, like even trying speaking different phrases or saying different things or reading about different things. They're more apprehensive about it. So it's interesting to see that and to confirm that the younger our kids are and the littler they are, the best it is to teach them about different cultures and different languages, because they absorb it so well, and they start looking at it from a different perspective from very young. They start looking at it as something normal, something that that belongs in their world as different, that differences are okay, and it's okay to try new things.
That's so interesting, because it is like the younger we teach them about other things, those other things become less other. They just become a normal part of what our world experiences. And
Yeah, that's so true. I actually have a funny story about that, of the first time when I realized what I was doing with my oldest, and I just thought it was part of how you raise your kiddos. And then I realized not everybody does that. So we were going to the Vietnamese market here in Houston, which is something that my oldest and I always did since he was little. because we liked exploring their different hallways and seeing what kind of food they had. We both love Thai tea, so we always went and order that. And we loved getting our shrimp and our other seafood that we cook at home from them because they have the freshest. So one day he decided that he wanted to invite one of his friends from his school to do a little shopping trip there with us. And his mom came and the little kid came. And when he came inside, the first thing that he did was wrinkle up his nose and say, "Why are things so different? What's that funny lettering they have? I can't read anything. Why does it smell? Why this? Why that?" And Samuel was kind of taken aback by that at the beginning and then said, "No, let me show you. This is cool. Look at the crabs. They're still moving. And look at this. And they just write differently than us because they have a different alphabet. Isn't that so cool?" And I thought, yes, kid, get the hang of it. Why is this so strange to you? And then I realized that he was, 7 or 8, and this was the first time that he had ever been to this Asian market, even though it's only 15 minutes away from where we live. And he had never just really been introduced to a different culture other than his own.
Yeah, that is so interesting, that story. I think it's so true. It's not even a matter of, I think, sometimes not wanting to expose our kids to other cultures. Like, oh, I don't want them to know any other culture but our own. It's just a matter of figuring out how to do it in ways that really work for us and make sense in the life that we lead every day, right? And food is such a great way. Going to different markets, eating. I love eating, so food's always a great way
It
for me. And cooking, because it's so engaging for kids to cook.
is.
Slightly messy or a lot messy, but engaging and good for them to get involved in that way. And so I think it's interesting and important to recognize as moms that sometimes the lack of action is also a kind of action, and that we can be intentional about how we expose our little ones to different diversity. Especially if we're living in a big city, there's so many festivals that expose to different diversities. There's so many different types of food. But if we don't live in big cities, there's still ways to do it through maps, through apps, through TV shows, through books. So there's always a way. Yeah. And well,
So
about
true.
the older kids in your class, I feel their pain because it is super hard to learn a language when you're older. And I mean, I'm a lot older than they are,
It's true.
but it's a lot harder, and there's a lot more hesitation and self-consciousness, I think, that comes with it when you're not exposed to it when you're young.
That's true. I keep telling them, well, I came to the States when I was 13 and I learned English perfectly fine, so you can learn Spanish. But then I think about it and it's like, well, that's true. But even in Mexico, my parents introduced me to English lessons and English, English lessons since I was probably 6 or 7. That was just, and that's, that's very common in Mexico when you're very little to be introduced to another language. Even besides English, I remember taking a semester of Japanese as well. So it does matter how we introduce our kids to the world in general, the world that's around us, not just our immediate world.
Yeah, it's so interesting. So Grayson went to summer camp this week, and he went to a summer camp that was in English, but all of the other kids are Spanish. So he's the only one that was a native English speaker. Everybody else sent their kids so that they could learn English, so that they would be exposed to English. And so I see that a lot here living in Spain. You see parents really wanting their kids to learn other languages besides Spanish, and then it's very important for them. I even had a taxi driver that was born in Spain, but he actually saved up money to go to Oklahoma because his hobby was studying Native American Indians. And so he had all of this knowledge and read all of these books, and he really just wanted to go to Oklahoma to see that. And I thought, wow, this is a taxi driver in the middle of Spain, and he's studying about Native American Indians in America. I mean, it's so great, to see things like that.
That's so true. And I think we don't realize it, but it does come from it must come from our parents and what they exposed us to and what they taught us as important when we were little. Because when I think about my dad, you know, he spoke fluent English before he even moved to the United States. And he spoke basic French, and he will always tell us about that. He will say, you know, I took so many semesters of French when I was in Monterrey, and I can carry on a basic conversation. And he will always say, you know, the more people that you can communicate with in this world that we live in, it's like the best opportunities that you have to meet new people and to do different things and to show also that you care about other people's culture. A lot of the things that my kids say in my Spanish classes, when I tell them about these things that you and I are talking about, it's like, well, in other countries, they're learning English too. And they're like, oh, great. Well, then that means we don't have to learn Spanish. I said, no, you're missing the point. The point is that we live in such a globalized world that we can no longer afford to say, well, I am me and you are you. And we don't need to socialize or engage or communicate. We do. We need to show that to each other. We need to show that we care. And one of the ways that we can do that is by learning about each other's culture and each other's language. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it really is. And it's just, sorry, my allergies have just been really bad. So I apologize for my throat clearing and creaky voice to everyone.
No problem.
But it is, it's not just an appreciation. I think it's also it's a part of being human. It's a part of saying we all have more in common than we are different. And it's about helping our kids learn that, but also tap into their curiosity of going beyond just their natural environment of what they see every day to other cultures and other environments and other people. I think it's so important.
I was thinking about that this morning. I was thinking how... it is. And I was, in my mind, I was using the exact same word that you're using right now. It's so important to introduce our kids, not even like intentionally to different cultures, but just to not shy away from their questions and not shy away from their own natural curiosity, because we're all born with curiosity. We are, as humans, you know, that's our human nature to be curious about things. But as parents, we can either inhibit that or we can support it. And we do that by the way that we go about our daily lives, and we also do it by the way that we respond to their curiosity. Going back to the Vietnamese market experience that I had with our friends, I remember the little kid kept asking his mom questions, and when he saw the Buddhist altar that was there in one of the counter spaces, he said, "Mom, what is that? Why do they do that?" And she brushed it off as like, "Oh, don't worry about it. That's just something different." And I was like, no, that was such a great opportunity to answer that and say, oh, different people believe in different things. And most of Asia believes maybe in these different Buddhist religions. And this is what they do. They set up altars in their houses or in their stores. And even if you don't know anything about what your kid is asking you, you can be totally honest and say, you know, I don't know, but let's look it up when we get home. Let's Google that. I mean, we're living in such a time in history that we can have access to anything that we want with one click of the phone. Let's use that to our advantage. You know, if my kid is curious about this tiny little thing that we just saw today and I know nothing about it, we need to be really mindful to not brush that off, or even worse, to inject it with our own biases and say like, oh, that's something awful that people do, or that's something that we don't need to worry about because it's so different from us, we'll never do it. No, to do exactly the opposite from that and say, let's dive into that together. Let's explore that. That's so important. It is.
It is. And I think sometimes it can feel uncomfortable as a parent or awkward to answer those questions, or maybe we don't have the answers or we don't know what the right answer would be. And so we kind of brush it off or don't talk about it. This is something I talked about with Kiana from Harlem Lovebirds in one of our first episodes is that the not talking about it almost makes it feel like it's bad to talk about. And so, again, I don't think it's an intentional thing we do as parents. I think sometimes it can just feel like, ooh, I don't know how to answer that, or that's a little touchy, or that makes me feel uncomfortable. So maybe let's just brush that off and not talk about it right now. But I think I think you're right. I think even if we don't have the answer, or we don't even know how to talk about it in a way that feels comfortable, we can even say that to our kids. You know what? I really don't know. And I really don't know how to talk about this right now, but we can look it up, or we can ask a friend, or we can, you know, we'll find an answer. And kind of start going about it that way. I mean, I think something Kiana mentioned too in that episode is that I think a lot of times we as parents bring in all of our baggage to those conversations when kids are just asking innocently. Just like they would ask, why is the sky blue, or why are you wearing a red dress? I mean, they just ask because they're curious. And I think we get uncomfortable because we bring our own baggage into it.
Yeah.
So when you look at that, how does the conversation of diversity come up for you as an immigrant, as a mom? How has it impacted your perspective and really translated into your parenting?
That's funny that you ask about that, because I always have stories for these things. I think in stories. Well, first I will say that I'm always extra mindful and extra empathetic to the newcomer. And in the United States, we always have newcomers, because this is a land of immigrants. We always have immigrants coming in, or even new kids coming into the classroom. I mean, just so many different things. And I'm always extra mindful of their presence, and I'm extra mindful to translate that to my kids' view, and kind of ask them to put themselves in their position and in their shoes. For example, when my son was in kindergarten, they had a little girl who moved in to their class from China, and she did not speak any English, and she was always crying and was very fearful in general of the class and very attached to her mom. And I noticed that my son and his classmates, the attitude that they were kind of generally taking towards this kiddo was like, oh, that's such and such, she doesn't know anything, or she's new, she's always crying, we don't want to be friends with her. And of course, I didn't say that last part out loud, but I think that was their general attitude. And so I told my son, no, Sammy, you have to put yourself into this little girl's position. How would you feel if our family, for one reason or another, had to pack up and go to a completely different country where you knew no one, where you had no friends, where you didn't speak the language that they're speaking, and when they tried to give you directions on what to do or instructions, all you heard in your mind was blah, 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 blah. Kind of like the Charlie Brown movie, you know, when the teacher talks and all you hear is like, blah, blah, blah.
Yes, I do know.
I know you're going through it right now. But that's exactly how it feels to be a newcomer or an outsider. And once I told him that, he was like, oh, mom, you're right. I've never thought about it that way. It must be so hard for her. You know, what are some things that I can do to help her feel welcome? And so we started talking about that. Maybe bring an extra snack and share it with her. Or when she's struggling and she's crying, instead of just brushing her off, give her a little pat on the back, or give her a welcoming smile when she comes in. Say hi when she pops in the morning, even if she's not in the best mood. And help her out and help her get adjusted. And thankfully, my kid's teacher was doing a very good job at talking to them about it in the same way. She was saying, this is new to our friend. She's still getting adjusted. Let's show her kindness. Because you know what? Even if you don't speak Chinese, you can still show her kindness with your actions and with your body language. You know, it's so important. And with every, you know, just little things that you can do to help them feel welcome, even if you can't say welcome in their language. And another thing that I encouraged my son to do was ask her, how do you say this in Chinese? Can you teach us some words? And the look in the little girl's face, just her face just shined whenever we ask her to show us about her language and her culture. So as an immigrant and as an outsider, I think I always have that in the back of my mind. It's like, yes, I know how you feel. I remember those days. Let me be welcoming to you and let me show you that we do care. And I noticed that even in the adult world, you know, the way that parents were not talking to the mom, the new mom, because they didn't know how to relate, was so annoying and upsetting to me, you know, because sometimes as adults, we can do that. We can say, oh, that's that mom that doesn't speak English, or that's the new mom that I'm having trouble relating to because she's so different. And instead, my natural instinct was to speak not super slow, but slower English to her and wave my hand when I was saying hi and be friendly. And then we figured out that she had an app that she could use to translate things that I wanted to say to her. And so sometimes she will say, text me what you just said. And so I will text her the things that I wanted to say, and then her app will translate. And she spoke English. You know, she did. We realized that it's just that she was not able to translate it in her head as fast as we were going yet. Which is interesting, because that's exactly the same thing I remember as an immigrant, as a newcomer, was that I could express myself, or I thought I could, way better than what I could understood, because it takes a while for your mind to adjust to that new language. It's like a decoding mechanism, you know. It takes a while for your mind to start decoding this new code that you're presented with. But it's sometimes easier to do it in writing. So, yeah, so not only do I think I have that unique perspective of saying, like, I know where you've been, I've been there also, but also I think that I am mindful in the way that I interact with newcomers myself. You know, what is the example that I'm setting for my son in the way that I interact with people who are not from my culture, who do not speak the same language as I do? Those are all important things.
It's so true. I can tell you from personal experience now, having lived in Madrid for 7 months, that I have more empathy for the women that used to come into the shelter speaking only Spanish, and their children were translating for them. If we didn't have you or one of the other Spanish-speaking staff members available. And I remember at times always being hurried or busy or trying to, because, you know, we always had things going on at the shelter, and not having as much empathy as I should have had for what they were experiencing. Because now I look at situations where I'm just trying to order food or buy milk, and I'm like, oh my gosh, toilet paper, this is so overwhelming and difficult. And you're absolutely right, it's so much easier in writing than it is verbally. There's been multiple times I've asked waiters or shop owners to slow down or to repeat, because I just couldn't get it as fast as they were saying it. So it is so true. And I've been really blessed, because the families we've met here at Grayson School and such have been very welcoming and understanding of my lack of Spanish. Thankfully speak a fair amount of English, definitely more English than I speak Spanish currently. But so that's been a blessing. But it is so true that you just don't know until you're in that position where you realize, oh, wow, this is really hard and this is really challenging. And it's not that I'm not smart or that I'm incompetent or that there's something wrong with me. It's just, this is a different language, a different culture, and I'm trying to learn it and figure it out, as well as do everything else that I have to do every day as a mom and as a human, right?
Yes, it does become very frustrating at points, very frustrating. I remember my first days in middle school, you know, American schools here have a different system, because in middle school, you travel from classroom to classroom, in most schools anyway. And in Mexico, we didn't. In Mexico, our teachers travel from classroom to classroom, which makes more sense to me than anything else. And I am horrible with directions because I'm dyslexic. So I was perpetually lost in my American school. And I did not know
that where doesn't to surprise find my me. Next
classroom. I know. You know me well. Yes. So I will come up to kids in the hallway with my super awesome English and my schedule in hand, my wrinkled piece of paper, and I will say, "Excuse me, how do I get here?" And the only thing I remember understanding was like, "Oh yeah," and then it's like, oh, this is so frustrating. I can ask for directions, but I cannot understand. Back to square one.
Yes, so true. I was talking to my brother's girlfriend who, she is from Spain, and I was like, it's just so fast. Everybody speaks so fast. And she was like, you do in English too. You just don't realize it. She was like, it's the same experience for us.
It is. And it is like, the same experience.
I guess you're right. It is.
But you're right. We don't realize those type of things until either we experience them ourselves or someone else, in this case, you know, us the adults, encourage the kids to think deeply, not just superficially, but think deeply about how this other person must be feeling because of this situation that they're going through. Empathy is so important to teach to our kids too.
Yes, it absolutely is. It's a huge part of diversity. I think empathy is a huge part of that. Do you remember the first time you had a conversation about diversity or difference with your littles?
I do. I was talking about it with my husband last night. And it's funny because I told him that I was going to be having this conversation with you. And I said, remember the time that Samuel was in preschool and he asked us and he completed the sentence for me. He knew what I was talking about. He said, yes, he asked us, or he told us he was so excited because a kid like him had come into his classroom, a new kid like him. And I was perplexed by what he was saying. I didn't understand. He was 3 years old. He was in preschool. And I said, Samuel, what do you mean a kid like you? Every kid is a like kid you. Like you. Yeah. Right. And he said, no, no, Mom, he really does look like me. He has brown eyes like me, and I think he even speaks Spanish like me. And I was like, oh, wow. I didn't realize that most of his class was American-born and so looked very different than him. And I didn't realize that he realized that kids looked very different from him. Yeah. And this kid, I mean, he was, we're still friends with him. He is son to Costa Rican mom and American father. And so he did look different than the rest of his classmates. At least in the eyes of my child, he did. He looked more like him. He looked a little bit more Hispanic. He had brown eyes and darker hair. And he was so excited about it. And so I took that moment to say, oh, well, Samuel, you know, your friend is from Costa Rica. And he said, what is that? You know, and I explained it's another country in South America where they, or Central America, where they also speak Spanish. And he said, don't all people who speak Spanish come from Mexico like us? I'm like, no, no. There are several other countries that speak Spanish, and Salvador, Nicaragua, and Honduras, and there are several people that come from there. And I remember from that day on, he was always very prompt or very curious about people's ethnicity. He will look at them and say, Mom, that one has brown eyes. Do you think they speak Spanish? I'll say, maybe, Samuel. I don't know. He's like, yeah, yeah. I think I figured it out. People with brown eyes speak Spanish and people without brown eyes do not speak Spanish. Or he will say, people with yellow hair do not speak Spanish. Which, like you said, it's so true that kids don't see things the way we see things. They just see things in color, you know? Kids with brown eyes or kids with yellow hair. It's not even blonde or, you know, brunette. It's yellow and brown and orange. I remember that was one of the first conversations that we had with him. He also, I remember from very young, told us, Mommy, have you noticed in our family we all have different skin color? And by that time it was just me and my husband and him. And I said, no, I haven't noticed that. He's like, yeah, that is skin color. It's like your piano, it's brown. And he said, in ours, it's a little bit more yellow. And I was like, oh, Samuel, well, that's because that is from the south of Mexico. And in the south of Mexico, people look a little bit more different than the people from northern Mexico. And, we were able to have a conversation about that. So that's even more complex, diversity in your own homeland or in your own country. And I mean, in the end, we're just all so different physically and personality-wise. That's what makes us wonderful as humanity, that we're all different human beings with different characteristics and uniqueness that make us who we are.
Yeah, it's so true. Our differences make us who we are, but the really important stuff of who we are is the same, that we love the same, that we can care the same. Those things are the same, but there are things that are also make us different. And so
That's so true.
it's funny when they have those conversations with you so young, because I think you don't even realize that they're thinking about that stuff or that they notice that stuff, but they do.
That's so true. I think one of the biggest mistakes sometimes we make as parents is to downplay our kids' intelligence, and not just their intelligence, but their ability to reflect on the world that we live in. We just think like, oh, they're just kids. They're just living in their own world, and they're not. They're living in the same world that we are, and they are very much aware of everything that goes on, even more aware than we are sometimes, because like you said, we're adults. We have already kind of made up our mind about the way that we believe about most things, and we have our own backgrounds and biases, and our kids are not. It's funny because they're all newcomers. They're newcomers into the world, and they're young, and they're still little, and everything is new to them. And what a wonderful opportunity that we have to show them, to embrace that, to embrace our uniqueness, and to embrace those things that make us different. I remember another story in which I am at fault as a mom. Recently, my son got to be principal of the day at his school.
Oh, God.
And yes, and as part of that day, he walks around with the principal and makes up new rules. And there's this all these shenanigans that go on with this very exciting day. But one of the things that he was going to get to do was to choose his lunch. And one of the staff members will go in and grab lunch for him from whichever restaurant he chose. So I was explaining how his day was going to go the night before, and I said, also, Samuel, you get to choose food from any restaurant you would like. And I said, the kids that have been principal of the day before you have all chosen Chick-fil-A, so is that okay with you? Like, I automatically assume that because everybody else had done it, that my kid should do it too, or that my kid will be okay doing it. And he said, actually, Mom, I would like my favorite ravioli from our Italian restaurant or shrimp from our favorite Central American restaurant, if that's okay. And I thought to myself, of course, like, why am I? That's another thing that we do. We tend to sometimes, I don't know what to call it, standardize our kids, instead of highlighting their uniqueness and their differences, which try to standardize them because that's easier or it's more convenient or it's just I don't know why we do that. We downplay their curiosity and their uniqueness, and we also, yeah, sometimes try to brush off those things that set them apart. And so to finish that story, he did end up ordering fried shrimp and fried rice from our restaurant, and the principal did a wonderful thing because he also ordered food from there. And he said, this is the first time I've had fried jaiba. So it was wonderful. I thought, how many times do we sometimes maybe mess up as parents, and then our kids show us the right way, you know. They show us not to shy away from those things that make us different, but instead to bring them out and to show them to people, because that is what makes us who we are.
Yes, it's so true. I mean, I can relate to that as a mom, because I had an idea of who my son would be when I had him. And it was a lot like me. Quiet, who's going to love right. to just sit and color and write. And we were just going to have these peaceful, beautiful moments together as a mom and a son. It was just going to be wonderful. And my son is not like that at all. He is so active. He is an extrovert 1,010%, where I am an introvert 1,000,000%. And he's never met a stranger. He makes friends everywhere he goes. I mean, he's just him. And it took me a good time to be like, I have to stop trying to fit him into the box that I envisioned. And I have to appreciate who he is, because who he is pretty amazing. And I have to value that. And then also teach him how to use his gifts in a way that is good for him and that makes sense, because he has a lot of energy, or because he is really active, or those things, to not make him feel bad about those things, but to help him cultivate those things in a good and productive way.
And that builds so much confidence for them, you know, because when they're little, they're barely getting to know who they are. But to hear you say it out loud, to hear you say, I notice this specific trait about you, or I notice how you like these things. And I think that's wonderful. I think that makes you special. Or I think when you grow up, you're going to be able to use that to do something so cool. In their minds, you just open this whole universe for them of possibilities of who they can be, using what they already have in them, and instead of trying to fit into the different molds that society is sometimes going to set up for them to fill in, or the different things that they're going to feel compelled to do just because the rest of the group or the rest of the people around them are doing it. I remember having a conversation with Samuel recently about, he was complaining about our current, in my adult terms, I will say our current administration. In his kids' terms, he will say the powerful people in our country. So he was complaining about the powerful people in our country. And he said, why can't we have more nice, powerful people in our country? And I said, well, Samuel, we do. Sometimes they're just in the background and we can't see them, but we have to keep our minds open to them. And also I said, but if you think about it, Sammy, one day you're going to grow up and you are a kind, thoughtful child. You always think about others and you are able to build friendships so fast, and you're so funny and so considerate. Think about it. One day you're going to grow up and you can too be an influential person or a person in charge, and you can make a difference by showing others how to treat people. And the look in his eyes, Elizabeth, was just like this look, like a whole another universe just opened before him, that he had never thought about that. And he gave me a huge hug and he said, thank you, Mom. You know, and I think that's such a powerful story of the way that we impact our kids' own, their own abilities to see themselves as who they are and like themselves for who they are. And then see themselves in the future, confident and knowing that they can be who they are and impact the world in their own little way, whatever that way that they choose might be.
Right. And to focus on what we can do too. I used to always say this at the shelter, to not look at what everybody else is doing, but to really focus on what we're called to do and what we can do and the actions that we can take and the difference that we can make. Even if it's in one kid's life or one person's life, or, you know, just in one way, that every day we show up not only thinking about all of the things that are wrong, but thinking about what am I called to do and what action can I take today? And I think it's such an important part of teaching our kids that every day is their action. There's always going to be craziness going on around them in the world, everywhere. Mm-hmm. And it's really focusing on who am I and how can I make an impact every day by being kind, by being empathetic, by being grateful, and by living the life that I'm called to live. So tell me, what daily moments in your life have helped you talk about diversity with your kids? Are there things that you use, like books or tools, games, to really teach them about diversity and to kind of help explore that more?
Well, we do read a lot. So reading has definitely been part of learning about diversity. There is this book that I like a lot that I'm reading to my younger child almost every day per her request. That is called Strictly No Elephants by Lisa Manchev.
Yes, that was in one of our Outside the Boxes. It's a great book.
There you go. It is. It is written in such simple language, but the illustrator did a wonderful job too at just depicting these images and what it looks like to not feel or to feel not wanted or not accepted, and how you can change that around by being welcoming and inviting and inclusive. It talks about so many complex subjects in such a simple way. You know, it teaches a very, very important lesson. And I think the reason why my youngest keeps going back to that book, I find it so interesting, so I'm going to share it with you. It's because at the end of the book, spoiling alert for the people who have not read it, at the end of the book, when they include the kids that were initially mean to them, every single time I read that part, she asks me every single night, Mom, why did they do that? They were mean to them. Why did they allow them in? And it allows for the conversation off, because that's the right thing to do. Even when you've been wrong or outcasted by somebody else, there should always be enough room in our hearts to accept all kinds of different, you know, not just the people that look differently from me, but also the kids that may have, or the adults in our case, that think so differently from me that maybe hurt me or offended me. I will also be mindful of that and be able to have room for them. So that's one of the books that we really like to read, that's so important for diversity. And I like another one called Giraffes Can't Dance.
Yes, that's another great one.
Yes, I love the story of Gerard, because he is very different, and he's so willing to try at first and then so self-conscious at the end, where he gets laughed at and almost, you know, ridiculed by his fellow animal friends. And at the end, he's able to find his own voice and his own rhythm and be himself and be content with that. I think that's very important for my daughter as well. She loves that book, and I think it's because she also has a disability that sets her off as a little different from others, where she struggles with the way she moves because of her gross motor skills. They're not as advanced or as developed as other kids. And I think, even though she doesn't say it out loud, I think she really likes that book because it speaks to her. She's in ballet classes, and I've seen her struggle and looked at other girls and seen like, oh, they were able to do that move way better or way faster than what I did, but I've seen her approach to it, and she never gives up. So it's so important, these little tools and these little books that we take maybe for granted, or we just take them as cute or colorful. They are teaching our littles great lessons. I'll tell you one more that I really like. It's called The Little White Owl, and this one is the story focuses on diversity as well, but in a different way. I think that it focuses on what it feels like to step outside of your comfort zone and then be met by not just by unkindness or by what is the best word for it? With skepticality from others, like looked at differently, and not just looked at differently, but not willing, there you would go, not willing to hear your story. And this little owl was so brave to keep on telling his story and to keep on telling what made him different and what made him unique. And in the end, is able to open the other little owl's minds to be able to see that being different is not a bad thing, and that we shouldn't be afraid to look into another person's eyes or life or the way he lives, and be able to embrace that or to explore that.
And I love that you picked those three books, and they're all animal-based, because this is something that
That's true.
When I did our diversity series, I picked a lot of animal books as well. And I think it's a good place for parents to start, because it's not, it doesn't have to be an MLK book or a Harriet Tubman book or about race per se. That teaching about diversity can start with animals. It can start with these books that there's just so many great books out there. It doesn't have to be what would seem like the obvious ones. I mean, because those books are important and I think needed too. But I think just as a starting point, sometimes if we don't know where to start, using the animal books is, I think, is a great way.
I think that we also, from very young, started reading books that were not your typical, your typical American books. Like we used to read a bilingual book called I Kick the Ball by Gwendolyn Zepeda that my son used to love, and my daughter as well. And we used to read this book called Raven, which is like a tale from the Pacific Northwest Native Americans. And my daughter loves Madeline, you know, the book about the French character, the little girl, and her braveness and the way she's different from all the other girls. So all these books, you know, even though they don't talk specifically about diversity or they don't approach diversity, they are teaching diversity because they're so different from the things that our kids maybe know from their everyday interactions or the way we live our lives. And it's so important for them to see, like, oh, well, here's a book about this other kind of kid and where he or she lives and how they do things there. And in the end, like you said earlier, to be able to see that we're not so different after all, that here is a story about a kid that looks just like me or that looks differently than me, but it's a kid regardless, and how he lives his daily life with his family, where he's at or where he happens to be born at, and how they do things differently over there. We might find some things that are very... very different from what we know, but then we might also find a lot of similarities, like they have a family like me, or they like to jump in puddles like me, or play soccer. That was a big one for my little one. Or my daughter, she loved how Madeline was so brave, because she had to be so brave when she went to her doctor's appointments and things like that. So it's important as parents to be mindful too, that we again, inspire their curiosity by reading things that are outside of what we will normally choose for them to read.
Because just exposing them to that again, I think it makes it less other. It makes it just another experience.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So are there ways that you get your kids involved in doing things and activities or actions that really help them kind of embrace diversity or build bridges between them and people that are different than them?
I think so. You know, we have a subscription to Little Passports, which is a monthly subscription that comes to your house and allows you to explore a country every month. And my kids love it. It has provided us with tools to explore different cultures in a very tangible way. For example, I'll tell you about the last one that we just got is from Thailand. So it told us little facts about Thailand and how important elephants are to their culture and things that they're doing to help the environment to protect elephants there. And then it also gave us a recipe for Thai soup. And my son thought that that was the greatest thing ever, even though he was really hoping for the recipe for Thai tea, because that's his favorite. He thought that this recipe for Thai soup was also awesome. So it's sitting on our counter because it's we just went to the grocery store a couple of days ago to buy the ingredients. And again, another wonderful opportunity to explore different cultures and different things is looking at their ingredients. It was so different from what we're used to, coconut milk and fish sauce and ginger, you know, things that we've never tasted before. And to my son, that wasn't a put down. That was encouraging. That was so new and inspiring to him. He was like, "Oh, we've never tried that before. I'm willing to try." Daily activities like this are so important. You mentioned it earlier, you know, when you talked about cooking together and baking together. It is messy. You know, the kitchen is unbelievable afterwards, but it's so cool. The other time we made brigadeiros, which is a special chocolate dessert from Brazil. Not only did he liked it, but he introduced all of his classmates to it. We brought brigadeiros the next day to school, and they all tried it, you know, and the teachers tried it, and we explained what we had learned from Brazil and how they made this. And we've had friends over to make brigadeiros, you know, and that's something completely foreign to me. I didn't know about it. I've never tasted brigadeiros before. You should if you haven't, by the way. They're wonderful little chocolate treats.
I love
So things
chocolate.
like that, you will love them. So little things like that, you know, we might take them for granted, but they are important and they're so tangible, you know, they're everyday things. I mean, we were in the kitchen making this dessert that other people in the other side of the world make for maybe their birthday parties, you know, or their everyday life treats that we had never heard of, and we were able to explore a little bit of their lives by doing
I mean, and how cool, just, I mean, just how cool is that? I mean, it's just so
that.
neat, like, that you get to learn about those kinds of things. Like, I mean, even how important elephants are to their culture. I mean, when we think of elephants, we think, oh, I'll speak for myself. When I think of an elephant, I think of the elephant at the zoo and how great that is. But I don't think about an elephant being important to my society or my culture per se. I mean, I believe we should take care of elephants because, but when, you know, it's just really neat how you can, even as an adult, start to pique your own curiosity again and remember that part about yourself and how neat it is to really learn about these things too with your little one.
That's so true. I remember one of the little souvenirs that we got was a notebook that had been made from recycled elephant poop. And
Nice.
I thought, that one is not gonna fly around here. And the first thing that Samuel said was like, "Elephant poop, what?" But then when he saw it, he was like, "This is so cool." And again, he took it to school. He was showing everybody his little notebook from recycled elephant poop. So, you know, just another example of how something that could be strange and not cool and so different and maybe even scary is not when you introduce it maybe at the right time or introduce it the right way, you know, saying like, "Oh, I would have never thought of that." And even Samuel went as far as saying like, "I will have never thought of that. That's a genius idea. I mean, if you think about it, elephants are just eating grass, so this is basically recycled grass." So yeah, you're right. Even as adults, it's so neat to never forget to keep on learning and to never forget to still be curious and open to new ideas and new everything, new recipes, new inventions, new ways of talking about things. I mean, just so many things. Just to be curious about who we are as a human race, as humanity.
So, talking about all of this, what three tips would you give moms that they could go out and do today to start teaching their kids about diversity and helping them build those bridges in their lives?
Well, going back to reading, one of them for sure that's super easy to do is pick out a book that you will have not picked for yourself as an adult or as a child, thinking about the way you were as a child. Think about a book, go out to the library, find a book that's maybe just a little bit more different than what you have approached before with your little one. It doesn't have to talk about diversity, like we said, it's just something that's from a different author or even a translated book from a different country or a different culture, and with that with your little. That is a super easy one that you can do, and it doesn't require a lot of time or money, and it's very accessible because most of us have access to libraries or bookstores. So that's one. Another one is look into your community. Our communities are sometimes so rich in diversity, but we are so comfortable living where we are that we don't realize so many events going on around us. And another one that's also very easy to do, well, very easy in terms of accessibility, but maybe very hard for us as parents, is try to remember a question that maybe you have shied away from in the past, or a subject that you have shied away from in the past that you were not willing to discuss with your child, be it because it was very foreign to you, or like we discussed, because it was so different, it was scary, or because it was something that you didn't feel comfortable talking about for whatever reason. And take a step into it, take a leap into that subject with your kid and dive into it together, and be willing to explore it and to approach it, even if it's difficult for you. And try to be honest with yourself about why that was difficult for you to approach in the past. I think that will be a great lesson for both kid and parent, on diversity.
It's so true, because I think as parents, I think parenting is so hard, and there's so much that is involved in it, and that we can constantly judge ourselves or feel bad about not doing it well enough. But I think we can always, instead of doing that, we should always look to growth, that we're never going to be perfect. That's just impossible. But that we always just every day try our best and we look how we can grow.
Yeah, that's very important to keep in mind, for us as adults, for ourselves, and also as for the way we're raising our kids.
So, Melly, I'm going to end by asking you, what is something that inspires you as a mom, in your life, in what you do every day?
I am going to share a quote that inspires me and has done so for a very long time, and is by Mother Teresa. And it's very simple, it has very simple language to it, but it has a very deep truth to it if you analyze it closely. It says, "What I can do, you cannot do. What you can do, I cannot do. But together we can make something beautiful." That quote is so inspiring to me, and it touched me when I read it back when I was in college, and it touched me so much that my husband and I even printed it out on our wedding invitations because we thought it depicted our relationship so vividly. You know, that sometimes we can be so different from each other. We are so different from each other, and that we can use those differences for good. We can use it for the good of humanity. We can use it for the good of our world. And instead of letting those differences divide us further or make us strangers to each other, that we can use them to build something beautiful together.
Oh, I love that, Melly. That's such a great quote.
It's a good one, for sure.
Well, I want to thank you, Melly, so much for being here and for having this courageous conversation with me. I know sometimes talking about diversity isn't always the easiest thing, and it can make us feel uncomfortable, but I really think this is just such an important thing for us as people and for us as parents to talk about and to really work through with in our own lives, but also with our kids. So thank you so much.
My pleasure. I really enjoyed talking to you, as always, and even more so today.
All right, you guys, until next week. Bye, y'all. Thank you, y'all, for joining us for this episode of Our Cheeky Days podcast. We can't wait to dive into all the messy of parenting life with you again next week. Until then, bye for now.